Mr. Speaker, the governor of the state of Illinois, Bruce Rauner.
From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Last November, voters made it clear they want bipartisan government. They don't want partisan bickering, political infighting, or personal conflict to get in the way of serving the needs of the families of Illinois. In our agenda, each of you will probably see some things you don't like, but each of you will certainly see many things that you like a lot. We should consider it as a whole, not as a list of individual initiatives.
Wow, there's a way to enter into a negotiation, isn't it, to say that it's, you know, it's my way or the highway?
I don't think he's saying all or nothing. I think he's saying recognize that the good is going to have to be taken with the bad.
I think the speech was very reflective of Mr. Rauner's thinking. I wouldn't characterize anything as a non-starter, because I agree with the governor that the state of Illinois needs a lot of work, a lot of attention, and that's why I say that the first order of business ought to be the deficit in the current budget.
That is House Speaker Michael Madigan. At the start, Governor Bruce Rauner in his first State of the State speech. We also heard comments from Democratic Representative Elaine Neckritz from Northbrook and Senate Republican Leader Christine Redonio. It was the governor's first State of the State, and we'll be talking about the things that came up in that, some reactions and discussion about the policies and what could come as a result in the coming weeks and months ahead at the Illinois State Capitol. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Joining us on today's show, Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Brian Mackey, reporter for WUIS and Illinois Issues, is with us. At our State House Bureau, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. And joining us this week, Mike Riopel, State House reporter for the Daily Herald from Arlington Heights. Mike, thank you for stopping by our bureau for a visit today.
Absolutely, Bill. Thanks.
And we'll throw it to Amanda Venicky first. Quickly, Amanda, what do you think was the highlight, or what would you set the table with when trying to tell somebody about this particular State of the State?
The governor unveiled a whole lot in his address, and I think that's one of the big takeaways, how ambitious and widespread this plan is. It's not just for this year, it's long term. It wasn't actually part of the speech, but came along with a two-page list he's calling the turnaround, and there is not a lot of detail there, perhaps, but at least a very lengthy list. And the second really notable thing is the reaction to it. This was the first time Rauner had spoken directly to a joint session of the House and Senate. And while he did get some applause, particularly on the Republican side of the aisle, there were occasions where even that was slow to rise. And watching it from atop the gallery, it was really remarkable to see. It was almost as if most of the Democrats spent the speech sitting on their hands. They had stone faces. There were cheers here and there, particularly when he talked about initiatives such as allowing or trying to expand the number of minorities that are involved in apprenticeship programs through unions. And of course, that's kind of funny because he spent much of the rest of the speech talking about how terrible unions are in certain ways, or at least plans that would take away from unions' power. But so a couple of cheers here and there, but by and large, the reaction to this was like nothing that I had witnessed, and even some laughter from Democrats when it wasn't meant to be a joke.
And that particular area.
Bites, right?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think those sound bites right at the top kind of nailed it, Amanda, that, you know, he started this speech with a, you know, kind of saying we're all going to work together. Voters chose a bipartisan government, but also what I'm proposing is a package deal, which maybe didn't mean it this way, but kind of sends that take it or leave it message. And you heard Senate Leader Christine Redonio at the top saying, well, he didn't mean it that way. It just means you have to take the good with the bad. But I think I heard from more than one Democrat who did take it that way, that you start the speech saying we're all going to negotiate, and then the second thing you talk about is that this is a package deal, and that kind of sets the tone. This is the first list, of real, specific policy proposals he's made, and to set the tone that way. I mean,
it comes as there are reports of Rauner basically making threats, almost, one could characterize them as, to Republican legislators that if you don't stick with me, this huge wad of campaign cash that I have, I'm going to use it against you to hurt you and your future political ambitions. So you'd better go down my road. And so it comes as there's those reports, and also just in general, this is a new governor. He has never been involved in state government before. So whereas he's made all these efforts to get to know legislators one-on-one, and as Mike noted, begins with talk of compromise and negotiations, there's also, I think, a lot of fear or questions within the Capitol that he's going to try and use the governor's office with all these executive orders that he's issued as more of a dictatorship. And so that very line was something that I think perked a lot of ears of members of the General Assembly, and they were not liking that at all. And it comes, again, this didn't really come up during the speech, but as we're dealing with budget issues for the current fiscal year, and the governor is seeking some extraordinary powers to manage that. So it all plays in together.
I guess the other side of it is, don't you start a negotiation with everything, So why would he come out halfway and concede, if he wants to get some things done, that he comes out with everything and negotiates from there? So that's potentially another side of it.
Yeah, and you're saying that right, Mike. I think that you do want to put everything you want on the table, and this is certainly everything. I mean, if all these things were to pass into law, yeah. Illinois, you'd have to be in, Georgia or South Carolina, or just a very different state with a very different set of politics. Personally, I have a hard time imagining that, even a lot of Republicans, as Amanda pointed out, the first time he mentioned his, what does he call them, employee empowerment zones, which is the way he's referring to this idea of letting voters in a county or city or some other local area vote if they want to have right to work, which is where people don't have to join a union, even if the union negotiates their salary and benefits for them. That is basically a not so subtle way of really stripping unions of a vital source of their money. I think Mike's right on point. Sure, he's going to put this huge agenda on the table, but whether it actually passes is a very different matter.
Well, I think it's pretty safe to say that most of it is not going to pass. But in his defense, he comes from an environment, a whole work experience, where he was the top dog. He'd say jump, and his lackeys would say how high. And so he lays out this proposal. It says, here's my plan, take it or leave it. That's the environment in which he's functioned. He's got a steep learning curve. He's to figure out what it means to be governor, heading one of the three branches of state government, and having to deal with a co-equal branch called the General Assembly, which is not going to say, how high do you want us to jump? In fact, they may tell him in unflattering terms, no, we don't go along with what you want to do. There are things in there that have been on people's wish lists for a long, long time. There are other things in there that, even if they were to happen, wouldn't make any difference. And there are some things in there that'll pass.
Yeah, Sorry, go ahead, Amanda.
I was just going to say that this list is so long and so huge. So maybe, Brian, we can get back to your point, but list some of these for listeners that weren't able to hear the speech because it was so widespread. So this ranges from everything to what he calls workers' compensation reform, to banning trial lawyers from quote-unquote venue shopping, and also banning trial lawyers from donating to judges and eventually moving to a merit selection for judges. He wants to to get into Illinois' unemployment insurance. He wants to restructure the motor fuel tax. He talked about these employee empowerment zones, kind of basically right to work. Again, the apprenticeship programs that allow for more diversity and minorities' participation. He wants to give more money to schools, but especially, he notes, for low-income families. So maybe that's a nod towards school choice. It's consolidating and refocusing state boards and agencies. It is some sort of task force that looks into teenage pregnancy. It's lifting Illinois' cap on charter schools. It is reforming, quote-unquote, teacher tenure and teacher recruitment. It's eliminating unnecessary standardized testing. I mean, the list goes on and on. That's just page one. Page two gets into his wanting to tax services in Illinois and freeze on property taxes, bankruptcy protection for municipalities, constitutional amendments for term limits.
It goes on and on and on.
One of the interesting things I thought is that some of the items that you ticked off, which I think might be significant, curiously, were not mentioned at all by the governor, particularly the idea about restructuring the motor fuel tax, because restructuring the motor fuel tax, that's sort of a euphemism for raising the gasoline tax or making some other changes to provide more money for roads. And heavens knows that we need that, but it's not the kind of thing you probably want to put out on the table at a time when you're trying to preach austerity and reform.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things that I, as I was thinking about this speech, what interests me so much is that, and maybe it's just because we've gotten so used to one-party control here in Illinois or in Washington, such gridlock that nobody proposes that anything that big anymore. Usually a governor or a president will come out in a State of the State or State of the Union speech and propose a few ideas. I mean, this is like a list. As you said, these ideas have been out there for a long time. There's stuff, I guess it all fits with the, you know, kind of the view of Rauner that we got during the campaign, but he was so vague for so much of the campaign and didn't really get into the specifics of what policies he would propose that I frankly was surprised at the breadth of this and how many individual, and again, we don't have legislation on these things. As Amanda said, it's basically two pages of talking points, but there are literally dozens of items on here. And it's just, it's such a huge agenda. I'm not even sure how we're going to, you know, wrap our minds around trying to cover this and follow it through the spring session to all these moving pieces.
Well, I think a lot of those moving pieces could be quieted down and just be non-moving pieces as it goes on.
Pretty,
I mean,
pretty quickly.
That doesn't mean there wouldn't be a significant number of issues out there. I wanted to get back to something, Amanda, you mentioned early on, you kind of mentioned these laughs and chuckles that came from the Democratic side of the aisle towards the governor. That was related to the minimum wage issue. Can you summarize that for us real fast?
Well, so notably, the state Senate had a committee that met the morning before the State of the State speech to pass out a minimum wage issue. And of course, this was something that had caused some trouble for Rauner on the campaign trail because he'd fumbled back and forth on his position, eventually saying that he would support a hike as long as it was coupled with pro-business reforms. And so during his State of the State speech, you could hear people were kind of, I heard a couple of gasps and some claps when he said part of his plan was to lift lower wage workers by a hike in the minimum wage. And then a sentence or two later, he said, over the next 7 years to $10. And there was an organic stream of actual laughter from the General Assembly chambers on the Democratic side of the aisle, because their plan, which was subsequently passed the very next day on Friday, the Senate got it out of the chamber completely and sent it over to the House, a measure that would do that much more quickly and, in fact, bring the wage to $11 by 2019.
And let's remember that the voters in Illinois just last November said that they wanted the minimum wage raised to $10 an hour by a month and a half or a month ago on January 1st. So it's certainly a very different timeline than both the voters and the Senate Democrats had envisioned.
Well, one issue he did bring forth, he mentioned workers' compensation reform. What we hear from the business community frequently, Charlie Wheeler, is they feel they pay a lot more for their workers' compensation than nearby states. Now, sometimes you'll hear a comparison of where they pay more than a nearby state, you won't always hear it when they're paying less, when they're pointing out a situation. But this seemed like something that House Speaker Michael Madigan, and of course, I'm not thinking on behalf of the Speaker, but it seemed like he could be open to some adjustments in that area.
Well, a few years ago, we did pass workers' compensation reform of a sort. We changed some of the procedures. We also reduced the rates that doctors could get for dealing with workers' comp cases. The big issue for the business community is, more than anything else, is what constitutes a compensable injury? What counts for you being injured on the job? And when are you on the job? For example, should someone be compensated if they're in an auto accident on the way to work? Should someone be compensated if they're injured at the company's softball game at a picnic? Those kinds of issues. It's called causation, and I think the business community would like to see a situation in where the extent to which a worker himself may have contributed to his injury is taken into account in terms of the award. And I think they would also like to see, what's the right way to say it? Make it more difficult for injured workers to doctor shop, as it's called, to find a doctor who's going to give them cause to be able to get a bigger settlement. It's a complicated issue, and it's been around for a long time, but I think you're right when you say that this is something the business community, I would guess, cares about a lot more than they care about what the corporate income tax rate is.
That does seem to be of concern to the business community. And go ahead,
Bill. Well, I did talk to State Representative John Bradley, who is one of the chief negotiators on that overhaul you were talking about from a few years ago, Charlie. And he said that was one of the most difficult things he ever did. And you have insurance companies and doctors and hospitals, and you have lawyers, and there are just so many moneyed interests out there who want, you know, things to be favorable to them and their clients, and of course the business community, that makes it a very thorny issue to actually come to a compromise and do more changes than we already had a few years ago. But he said, you know, like almost everybody else in Speaker Madigan's leadership team, you know, they're open to working with the governor and seeing what they can come up with.
Well, and it strikes me that this may also be an occasion for the kind of the revival of the old practice in which business and labor would sit down and work out a so-called agreed bill, and they'd come to their own compromise, present it to the General Assembly, and the General Assembly would sort of rubber stamp it. And that saved the political capital of individual lawmakers having to get involved and take sides before there was a deal that everyone could support.
You're listening to State Week in Review. More conversation just ahead about the governor's State of the State message.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Information at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, and Mike Riopel of the Daily Herald. I'm Bill Wheelhouse, and one issue that had come up a few days before the State of the State, you covered it in Decatur, Illinois, what traditionally had been a pro-labor town, was this creation of right-to-work zones, as they were calling it, Amanda Venicky. Do you want to summarize kind of what the governor was trying to get across related to unions and those types of issues in this speech?
Subsequent to the speech, Rauner has been making the rounds in Illinois. He's back in Decatur, actually, on Friday morning. And he was asked and said, no, I'm not anti-union. He's repeated that. But these local empowerment zones, as he's phrasing them, are very much what unions see as trying to take away one of their key sources, both of funds and also by doing this locally, it appears as if Rauner is trying to either, one, maybe get around the General Assembly. The Illinois Policy Institute, which Rauner was a donor of before becoming governor, has said they don't believe any legislation is necessary right now, that it would be already you could have localities vote and choose to basically make themselves right-to-work areas locally. And so that would say that individuals who don't want to give unions money for the work that they do to collectively bargain for all individuals, not just actual members of the union, because whereas Rauner phrases it as forced unionization, that's not actually what it is. You don't have to join. You just have to pay them for the work that they're doing that you get the benefit of through these, you know, higher wages and other guarantees. And so it could be that. And it's also seeing as, okay, Rauner says, we don't have to do it statewide, but if you have one area that does it, therefore it would be perhaps less costly for businesses to operate there, and it would be kind of a dominoes fall statewide. One locality does it, then the other. There are a whole lot of questions here, and of course, it was just a speech. Rauner did not get into any more detail during his State of the State address than he had earlier, other than really saying that this is part of his plan to help not just the state of Illinois, but to help municipalities that are struggling. And it was part of his larger platform there regarding also this municipality bankruptcy and the property tax freeze and government consolidation. And I think Mike has covered that too.
Yeah, right. That you're right. They're all kind of connected. Save money in a couple different ways. And then he proposes via that saved money that property taxes would be frozen for 2 years. And this was a big talking point on the campaign trail and one that played in the Chicago area pretty well, I think. And this was the first time that we got any detail on that. And basically what he's asking to do is to freeze the amount that government asks for in property taxes for 2 years. And things like that have been tried before, not exactly that, but there have been bills to freeze property tax rates or lower them, and local government doesn't like that usually, and they have a lot of power around here, and a lot of legislators are former mayors and former local government board members, and so that's going to play into that. I mean, it's an idea that's very popular with voters, and some people say it's also very, very difficult to do.
Charlie Wheeler, this probably was the strongest complaint about property taxes we've had before the legislature since back in the days of property tax cap efforts that they had put in.
Yeah, I would say there's not a total freeze in place, but already we have the property tax extension limitation law, PTEL as it's referred to, or tax caps, which limits the growth in the levy that a local government non-home rule unit can request from year to year to the lesser of the rate of inflation or 5%. And in recent years, inflation has been so low that the amount of money they can ask for has been in, you know, like 1%, 1.5%, something like that. Now there are exceptions for new construction, but it's the problem with arbitrarily saying, okay, you can't have any more money next year than you had this year, is what about the increased cost of providing services? For example, for school districts, are you going to freeze teachers' wages too? Is that part of it? Are you going to freeze what you have to pay for light and heat, what you have to pay for fuel for running the school buses? The costs are going to go up. That's kind of a given. And when you're frozen, how do you deal with that without cutting important things? I've argued for a long time that the best tax relief that's been proposed, the best way to deal with property taxes, was what Jim Egger proposed way back in 1997, where he put forward a plan that would have increased income tax rates, but also would have decreased property taxes by $900 million by requiring school districts to cut $1 from their property tax levy from each new dollar they got from the state. And it was shot down basically by suburban Republicans who didn't like the idea of their taxpayers having to pay more, but it would have really meant $900 million worth of property tax relief.
this isn't the first that we've heard about property tax relief. As Mike noted, it was big on the campaign trail. We saw Governor Pat Quinn try to get in there with his proposal for rebates, but it gets into this larger discussion as Illinois is also talking about retooling the education funding formula. So all of these things, this entire agenda, is by Rauner and by other legislators commingle in so many ways. And so that gets back to where Rauner had said, I present you this package as a whole. Please see it as that. But that's not how voters see it. That's not how campaign brochures see it. That's not how commercials see it. And that's not how legislators view it when they're taking these individual votes that will be very difficult for them. So there's great difficulty in presenting any one of these to go forward, even if you do take it as a larger picture.
And I was just saying, I think it's worth noting, you know, Amanda, you talked about how individual legislators are going to respond. I thought it was interesting that we've begun to see sort of the dynamic of how Speaker Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton might deal with the governor separately. So the Speaker came to the Blue Room, our area where we have press conferences in the Capitol, and spoke to reporters there and said that, as we heard at the top of the show, nothing's a non-starter. He doesn't plan to be an obstacle. You know, we can have votes on these things. Some will pass, some will not. On the other hand, Senate President John Cullerton did not speak to the press, but he put out a statement, called the governor's speech divisive. So we might be seeing the beginnings of this, or maybe the continuing of this sort of good cop, bad cop dynamic from the Democrats dealing with the governor.
And it's that point in the show where we'll try to get in a couple of notes from the field. We'll start with Mike Riopel.
Well, there is a big, not big, but the five babies were diagnosed with measles in Palatine just this last week. The Department of Public Health is all over that. They say at least 15 babies were exposed, and there will probably be more cases. Some of the political wrangling about measles has not appeared in Illinois much. The governor said yesterday when we asked about it that, you know, he's sorry that this is happening and everybody should be vaccinated. Bill Foster, the physicist, went on the House floor the day before and kind of before any of this came out and kind of made a speech about the importance of vaccinations. But if that continues to spread, I mean, it wouldn't be surprising to find that issue in the political sphere.
Amanda Vinicky.
Noticeably missing from this speech was any notion of pensions. That was part of the Illinois turnaround two-page brief Rauner put out and moving to 401k. But that, nor really did he get into any of the budgetary aspects that Illinois has to deal with. He'll give his budget speech soon enough and we'll be getting to Rauner's plan for state spending, but that has already surfaced at the Capitol. The Democrats last year did not pass what was broadly characterized. It was an incomplete budget, and we're seeing that surface. A really emotional hearing was held at the Capitol over the week, and it was the first time we heard from the governor's chief budget officer, Tim Newding, and they talked about money running out for a child care program, and they had mothers, you know, crying that said without state subsidies, they don't know where to send their kids while they go to work. And so we have already heaped on Governor Rauner's lap a really tight situation, and we're going to see what he does about it. There were no guarantees, no actual deals or agreements made at the end of this hearing.
And that's all the time we have for this week's edition of State Week. Thanks to Mike Riopel with the Daily Herald. And you can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. You can also search it out at iTunes U. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.